To have great poets, there must be great audiences. This Walt Whitman quote highlights why open mic events can be so powerful. Open mics are not only a place for people to share their stories, but it's a place for an audience to lend their support. Hello, my name is Jessica Vaughn, and you're listening to The Voice of a Generation, where every voice has a story to tell. Today, on the show, I'll be talking to Shihan Van Cleef, one of the founders of The Poetry Lounge, a weekly open mic in Los Angeles. While Shihan has written and performed his own poetry, in 1998, he helped create a space to allow people to share with a welcoming audience. Shihan, I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Thank you for coming.
I'm glad to be here.
Awesome, awesome. So before we kind of talk about the poetry lounge a little bit, I do want to talk to you a little bit about you. And I want to start with, what inspires you to write poetry?
So it's kind of changed. I think now I kind of go where the poetry takes me. I think once poetry became my career, I think the luxury of just only writing when I was inspired, you know, that moment has kind of passed. Mm-hmm. So now I write a lot about my family, about my kids, about the students I work with. And then the other side of that is when I have to write for work. So it's companies, and there's not much inspiring about, you know, writing about sneakers or about basketball, about chicken wings like this. You know what I mean? So I write when I have to. And so that's a discipline that I've had to learn, mm-hmm. you know.
Did you have a moment in your life where you, like, that aha moment where you're like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life?
I think so. I think the aha moment was the first night I read in Los Angeles. I was in L.A. on Melrose at a place called the Juke Joint. And I read a poem and I had my eyes closed the entire time because I didn't want to forget it. And in my mind, I was watching myself write it. It was so corny. But when it finished, who came up to me off stage was Poetry and Dante Bosco, who are two of the other founders of the Poetry Lounge. And that moment and just the tribe that we created and the community that was there just made me go, this is what I want to be part of, mm-hmm. where people share stories.
Yeah. How long have you been writing and performing your poetry?
Oh my God, I've been writing for a long time. Since second grade, I could say, was when I first started to write, mainly because I love to read and I grew up poor and Scholastic Book Club, and I used to enter contests to win books, and that's how I got started into writing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that your style has changed over the years? And from the first time you performed to now, do you think the style has kind of changed?
Yes, it's changed a lot. I think I'm a lot more composed. I think I was a lot more energetic and jumpy and just a lot of nervous energy. And I think now it's just honed into making sure that they pay attention to what I have to say more than how I'm doing it, where my hands are and where my body is.
Mm-hmm. I also know that you used to perform on Def Jam Poetry. What was that experience like for you and being around those people and in that environment?
It was a dope experience. I thought it was great, mainly because they came to us before the show was out, and they said they were going to do a show, and they wanted to know if we wanted to be involved. And so a lot of the inspiration for that show came from the Poetry Lounge, and the director of the show brought me in the first season to get poets for the show. So I was working from the inception until it went off the air, and it was a great experience because finally poetry had been given a platform that a lot of people had shied away from allowing poets to have. Mm-hmm. And it was just a great moment. You know what I mean? Yeah. My nose sounds terrible. I'm sorry. Just my sinuses are terrible. So I'm there like, and that's what that is.
You're good. So what's performing like for you now? Do you still get nervous? What's it like for you now?
Oh, yeah. I still get nervous. I get nervous mainly before I start. Once I start, I feel like there's a reason why I'm up there, and I believe in purpose, and there's a purpose in why I chose to read that poem at that moment. And so a lot of the nerves kind of subside after mm-hmm. that initial, like, okay, all right, start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also know that you say a lot that you're from New York as well. So do you think that there has been an influence in the style that you write and what you write about from, like, New York culture to L.A. culture?
I think so, just because of my upbringing. But I do think there culturally is a huge difference between New York and L.A., and not even just New York and L.A., just East Coast and West Coast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot more movement in back East. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more going on. I think L.A., you know, for the most part, I don't go out like I used to, but it's a shut-down city. So after a certain time, the city shuts down. New York is a 24-hour city, and I think just the energy of that creates a different environment for people to create in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for sure.
Did you feel more open to creating out there than you do out here?
No, I like the calm. Yeah. So, I, you know, when I moved here, I moved – well, when I first moved here, I lived in Torrance, and that's, you know, I was brand new to Torrance, and I was, there were, you know, four black kids, I think, in the school that I was at. And it was just like a weird moment. And, you know, we created these pockets, and I think being in that pocket, being in my room a lot because I didn't go out a lot. So that was where I created. So I think I had a space to create. And I think over time, those spaces have moved. You know, when I got my apartment, then it was that. And then it was, you know, my car. Or when I was in a relationship, it became my bathroom floor because I didn't want to interrupt anybody while they were sleeping. So I'd go in the bathroom, turn the lights off, and sit on the floor with my book and write. And then, you know, that's kind of just moved. I like being in, now, though, I like to be more in public places when I write. So it sounds corny to me now, but I sit in I don't even drink coffee, but I sit in Starbucks and I write there because I like the movement that's going around. I can hear my nose going, like the air just shooting out of my nostrils.
You're good, you're good. So now a little bit about the Poetry Lounge. Yes. You started that in 1998, right?
Yes, we did.
So what was the, how did you guys kind of start that up?
The Poetry Lounge started basically in Dante Bosco, who's one of the founders of the lounge, in his living room. So at that time, I was living there, and it was like a communal house. That's basically what it was, and we used to always have people over. And then we started having open mics at the house, and I had the living room, so I had to move all my stuff out of the living room and set up the mic and put the speakers up. And, you know, it was a great thing to share because it's a vulnerable thing to allow people in your house for that, but it's still awkward to have 50 people in your house and you don't know, and they're in rooms and doing stuff. So we decided we needed to find a space. And it was a place basically created for friends to get together and share stories and have fun, because we knew so many people that were artists in some way or another that we needed a space to do things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the open mics that were here, especially when, because we were all teenagers, that when we started that, it was all ran by older people. Everybody, all the open mics in LA when I came here were ran by people in their 40s and 50s. And the guy who was running the LA Slam was 60. And it was like, what the heck? Where the young voices at? And so we wanted a space for young people to go hang out and chill and create. And that's why we created the lounge.
Yeah. What's it been like for you seeing how much the Poetry Lounge has grown?
I think recently I've started to notice the impact of the creation of the lounge being what it is, because we had no intention of it being what it became. Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing with most art. I think you just put it there and whatever happens, happens. Mm-hmm. No matter how great you think it is, if no one else thinks it's great, it doesn't mean anything. So seeing it now, I think I look at it, especially now because we're 21 years in and I have people who were introduced to me when they were 6 years old, and now they've graduated college, and I'm like, that's terrible. It makes me look so old. And so, you know, we have that, and then, you know, we have people who were basically born in the lounge, and we're seeing people, families grow, and I think it's an amazing thing to look at it that way, more than just the art, because, you know, artists are going to come and go no matter what. It's just going to happen, but it's a pretty amazing thing to watch happen now, because we're like, wow, we've kind of, in a weird way, we've changed the landscape of what poetry was in Los Angeles, and in a weird way, we've changed the impact of poetry as a art form across the world, because with the inception of deaf poetry and then, you know, like button poetry, all these things, those are things that all spawned out of these different ideas that people from the lounge kind of did. And now we see, you know, when I look at what the lounge has put out, and we look at poets who were poets at the lounge. And now I see, you know, there's Omari Hardwick, who's the star of this show Power on Stars, and Megan Good, and Aloe Black, and Will.i.am. And you see all these people, and you're just like, wow, we have done a lot. But you don't think about it when you're hanging out with friends because they're just the friends. But then when you look at it from the other side, when you're out and people are like, hey, can I have your autograph? That's weird to be with my friends and have that people run up to them and go, hey, can I get? Yeah. It's so weird. Rosario Dawson. There's so many people that came from the lounge that it's just an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah. So all those people used to perform at the lounge?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Rosario used to come with me to Fairfax.
And do
the, yeah.
Wow. Okay, cool. You're good. So the Walt Whitman quote I said earlier, to have great poets, there must be great audiences. What does that mean to you?
You know, when you said it, the first thing that came up was Oppose Them, which was a collective of two poets, Bowerber and Intelligent Gentleman, and Mark Schaefer, who were two of the oldest poets at the lounge. And they told us to put that quote on our projector. And so that's always what I think of. Yeah. And because they were like, yeah, you know, it's so important. This space cannot exist without the audience. And it's true. You know, if the audience isn't there, you're just performing for yourself. And it's, a, you know, echo chamber. It's this room here. It's like, it's great. I can sit in here and blah, blah, blah. Nothing. It has no impact outside of this space. But once there's an effect, and once you, it's like the cause and effect. Once someone sees it and feels it, then they take it somewhere and it's just a different thing.
How do you think that the Poetry Lounge got to be, like, the biggest open mic in America?
I think that, in a weird way, it's maintained an intimacy, even though it's that big. And I think that's a weird thing. I say weird a lot. It's a strange thing. So I switch to strange every now and then. So it's a weird thing because I think the family vibe of what it was, and we were always there together. The four of us, when we first started it, every week, and then the people who became the regulars of the lounge, we all congregated to one space. And the old lounge, before we were at the new, at the Greenway Court Theater, which we've been at for 20 years, but the space we were before that, you know, there was no place to hide. So we literally, there'd be 20 people standing behind the DJ booth talking to each other. And I think people, when they see people enjoy themselves, want to be part of that. And not in any kind of, like, pat myself, like, yeah, we did it this way. But when you see someone smiling, you kind of want to know what's going on, you know. And that's what it was. It was just a get-together. And people want to be part of something that feels good. And I think the lounge feels good. I think we, you know, we don't curate the space. But I think we've been lucky where there's been a good balance of what's going on over the course of the Tuesdays that have been going on. Is that me? That's terrible. Go ahead.
It's okay. Did you want to, I know that you're not feeling super well right now.
It's horrible.
Did you want to read something?
I don't think I should do that right now. It's okay. It's okay. Awful.
No problem. No problem. I also want to ask, what has kept you personally invested in the Poetry Lounge, doing that every single week for 20 years?
I think now, and it's been a recent thing. I think I've thought a lot, especially after having my family and having kids and being married, that there's something about having a legacy space and something that was created and then is maintained properly. So part of me being there every week, outside of me going because I enjoy it, is also making sure it's still going the way it's supposed to be going and running strong. And where, you know, my hope is we find the transition team that we can turn things over to. That's why, if you notice, the other founders aren't there anymore. I'm like the last one standing. And I'd like to be able to back myself out, because I think it's important to have someone young and someone who has the time to invest to do it all. To do it all. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what we were when we started. It's like, yeah, we need that now.
So, if you... How do you think you're going to feel that, you know, that day that you do hand it over to someone else and that kind of gets passed on?
I mean, there'll be, I don't know. There'll be a moment of, you know, sitting at my house on a Tuesday and be like, oh, the lounge is going right now. I wonder how it's going. Should I go? And then, I don't know. I think there will be some missing. I'll miss it, you know, to a certain degree. But I think over, I keep hearing. So I think it would still be a good thing. I think I'd miss it, but it'd be worth it. And then to go back, you know, a couple times a year, just step in and just see it, sit in the back and sit upstairs and just watch. I mean, hopefully we'll be in our own space at the end of the year or something, but still, that would be kind of the goal.
So, I don't know if you just said this, you guys have plans to move somewhere else?
We would love to have our own space. I think in the end, as great as Greenway is, and we love that theater, it would be great to have a space we could call our own that is ours 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and have other events running in it, you know, to have to house different orgs in it, to run different nights, not just poetry nights, have, you know, acoustic, whatever it's going to be. I think to have a space is something we definitely have aspired to and collectively put our heads together to start figuring out how that looks in a strategic way.
So right now, for anybody that doesn't know, Greenwood Court Theater, that's at Fairfax High School in Los Angeles. So going from there, do you have an idea of the type of space? Like, do you want to rent a place? Do you want to build a new place?
No, we would love to own a space. Yeah. I'd rather not lease a place, mm-hmm. you know, just because I think legacy space, I think, you know, I think for us, the model we could look at is something like the New Eureka Poets Cafe in New York, where they have that building. Mm-hmm. That building is theirs, you know, and there's something to having a space that people, you know, as great as Greenway is, they know every Tuesday it's there. Mm-hmm. And I think to have another space that is that, I think would be fantastic for us.
Yeah. I know that there's people that go up every single week, the same people. What's it like for you seeing them grow?
Oh, it's fresh. And I think there's two, being there all the time, mm-hmm. there's definitely two sides. There's the growth. There's also the people who get caught up in just the applause of it and think that's it. Mm-hmm. And so once they get the applause they want, they just stay there. Mm-hmm. And I see people that have been coming for, you know, a couple of years now where I'm like, there's no growth. Mm-hmm. You still could do some great stuff and it's still entertaining, but I'd like to hear more from you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think in a space like the lounge with the audience that's there, that it necessarily fosters that mm-hmm. because they're there to be entertained in a weird way mm-hmm. and weird again in a way. And so they're not pushing for something else. And I don't think an audience would feel comfortable enough to tell somebody, you need some new poems, mm-hmm. you know, but I would, but I don't think most people do. So it's dope seeing people grow. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other side of it where I'm like, wow, there's some people who I thought would have blew out the water by now. And they haven't, you know, someone like Rudy Francisco or Javon Johnson or even Jessica Salgado, like seeing them grow was pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Watching them being extremely quiet people, not talkative at all, and now owning the space and their stories is pretty dope to mm-hmm. see.
Yeah. I know that a lot of times with poetry, it's the kind of way to be vulnerable and to share your story in that way and in such a creative way. And a lot of people do say that writing and poetry is a therapy. So do you feel that it's that way for you as well?
It's been therapeutic. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it as my sole therapy, but mm-hmm. I do think it's therapeutic because I do think for a lot of people, this sounds so crazy to me. I think for so many people, they don't have therapists mm-hmm. or the money to seek out counseling. So that is their therapy for them. And I think that's important to have, mm-hmm. to have some kind of outlet, whether it is poetry or painting or dance or whatever, there's some kind of outlet that is needed, mm-hmm. you know. Or you just ball spots or whatever happens to you. You know what I mean?
What do you think about the difference in the growth? Like, do you think that there's a difference in how a poet grows having an audience and not having an audience?
Yeah, because I think art is, I mean, to me, the purpose of art and the purpose of doing art is to get it to as many people as possible. I think sharing it with as many people as possible. And I think if you're stuck in your own head, it's like anything you keep in your head, you could drive yourself crazy thinking about either it's the most amazing thing or it's horrible and you could just eat yourself up. So mm-hmm. I think it's important to have an audience or someone to bounce things off of, or it's kind of hard. I mean, I assume it's been done and mm-hmm. possible, but I think you have to be surrounded by something mm-hmm. to kind of grow.
Yeah. Every time you show up at the Poetry Lounge on a Tuesday night, what is your goal when you open those doors, or do you have a goal or a hope that the night turns out?
I just hope the night is good. Yeah. I hope that I'm not sitting and go, oh my God, this is terrible, which has happened. You know, in 21 years, you can't avoid, oh God, another one. Like, you can't avoid that. But outside of that, I think now something that I do that I never used to pay attention to is the fact that the host is the audience's first relationship to the space. And so there's something about creating an environment that people feel comfortable in. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I've always done it. But I think about it now where I'm like, oh, me joking around and doing that stuff is because mm-hmm. I want people to feel comfortable when they're in here. So, yeah.
Do you happen to remember, did you have anybody when you were younger, when you were kind of starting to develop a style in your way of poetry, did you have anybody that was a mentor for you?
My biggest mentor, her name is Ronnie Walters, and I was part of her collective called Ronnie's Backstreet Poetry. And I was part of that. Dante was part of that. Jamel Poetry. We all were part of it. And she took me under her wing and showed me a lot. And she was older than I was. And she showed me what it was to get people to respect your art and your craft who normally wouldn't. So one of the things she really did was she put poetry in spaces it hadn't been, mm-hmm. and it wasn't really going to be accepted in that way. So we used to do poetry at the Comedy Store on mm-hmm. Sunset okay. and go to different comedy spots. And I think that creates a different thing, too, about how you learn how to own your space and a stage, mm-hmm. you know, and tell your story no matter where you go. Yeah. She was great at that. And she also, you know, gave me some of the ins and outs of, like, early poetry business. Mm-hmm. Poetry business has completely changed from then to now. But yeah. she showed me a lot. Like, you know, I remember the first paid poetry gig was, like, dinner and like, some drink tickets. And I was like, oh, and I called my friend. I'm like, I'm getting paid dinner and some drink tickets. And so I remember getting $15. And then I remember getting $100. And I was like, oh, my God. It was crazy. And that was something she showed. And now that model is completely different. There are some people who still live by that model, which is bananas to me. Mm-hmm. But still, you know, it was great to have someone like Ronnie kind mm-hmm. of be there.
Did you always know that you wanted poetry to be your career?
No, I mean, I went to school to be an English teacher, so writing was going to be involved mm-hmm. in some way, but I didn't think poetry would necessarily be the thing mm-hmm. that became my career. It was something I knew and felt I would do mm-hmm. always, but it wasn't something I was like, this is going to buy us a house, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever have, do you remember, like, one specific performance that you did where you're just like, oh, man, like, this is the best, I just want to...
I think there are two moments that stand out for me. The first time I performed at Deaf Poetry on HBO, mm-hmm. my entire family was there. The majority of my family, it was the first time my family had seen me perform, mm-hmm. all of them. And basically everywhere I looked when I was performing, I saw my sister, mm-hmm. saw my other sister, I saw my brother, I saw my best friend growing up, I saw my father in the back. And it was great, and my aunt, and blah, blah, blah. And it was just a weird, like, I was like, oh my God. And I was overwhelmed, and I'm a big Knicks fan because I'm from New York, and I saw Patrick Ewing, and I was like, Patrick Ewing. And then he came up to me after the show, and he's like, you made me cry. And I was like, I made Patrick Ewing cry. And it was just like that moment, you know? And so it was that, and that's a very intimate space where they shoot that. And then the other side of that was performing at the Essence Festival in New Orleans and performing on the main stage and 50,000 people listening to poetry at one time was mm-hmm. just a wow. They're listening, you know, half of them were like, what, get off, what the hell is this? But mm-hmm. I came to see Alicia Keys, whatever. Yeah. But I still did what it was, and it felt good to be there.
Mm-hmm. Nice, awesome. Well, if anybody wants to see more of you or learn more about the Poetry Lounge, like, you know.
Well, if they want to learn more about the lounge, it's DA Poetry Lounge. The Poetry Lounge, we started in the 90s. So, duh, it was very, you know, part of what we did. So, the Poetry Lounge at Instagram, _ in between duh and poetry. And then myself, it's The Real Shihan, Shihan, at Instagram and all those things as well.
Awesome. Well, I really, really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much
for talking
to me.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
I did.
Awesome, awesome. So again, I want to just thank you. And if someone wants to go to the Poetry Lounge, it's every Tuesday night. It's $10 to go in. Every third Tuesday, they have the Slam Night.
It's 8:40 to midnight.
Yeah, and then it's April's National Poetry Month, so there's other stuff going on.
So we have the Get Down Festival every Friday and Saturday this month. There, it's
awesome.
Yeah,
and you can go to the Poetry Lounge.
You can go to Poetry Lounge and find out all the information of what's coming up. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Well, once again, you're listening to Voice of a Generation. I'm your host, Jessica Vaughn.
Just take that with you. Yeah.
All right. I'm your host, Jessica Vaughn, and I want to encourage everyone to share their story. Thank you so much for tuning into KPCRadio.com, and have a great night.
All right.